May 1, 1994, and we missed the parade in Moscow today. Greetings, Commander.
Well, only some of you. Would you like a report? The communists are having trouble competing with the Christians. And if you don't believe me, watch CNN. Good afternoon. As we come into this meeting, it's got to be a business meeting. It's going to have to be a continuation of our board of directors meeting of the other evening, but I believe that we can talk openly in here. Decisions have not been reached as to what to do about arising circumstances. I'm always glad when I have the discretion to warn you ones in advance. Every now and then I need to do that because especially Dorma's getting completely overwhelmed. She's having to work more and more and more in the dark with the stakes higher and higher and higher. And the circumstances of the legal proceedings going on over books, over gold, have gotten completely out of control, out of hand. I had told these ones to not set foot in the state of Nevada, period. But of course, lawyers get nervous, panicked, mainly because they don't do their job. And then word comes back, well, if you don't produce Eckers as my witness on Thursday, I'm withdrawing from the case. Well, number one, that is really pretty stupid on his part. More stupid on his part is the suggestion that, and he stated it, I just cannot work with ones who do not trust me. This is a lawyer in which, now in a year and a half, nothing has been done except what has been done here. So let's look at what the problem apparently is. Well, I have to have the one there who knows about Mr. Green's notes. Well, Karen knows, Kathy knows, everybody around knows. So what are we doing? Are we setting you up for the kill as Mr. Horton and Mr. Abbott would concur? I think you'll notice right here, just arrived from Mr. Dickey. I don't even know if Mr. Jaffe, who has his name on the envelope, we did. We opened federal mail addressed to Mr. Jaffe, but it did come to the other address. I would like any of you who are curious to come up here later on your way out and inspect this paper. There is a copy of all of the notes signed. As each note would be made, it would be added to the prior one, and Mr. Green would sign it. So the last one would have been entered. Mr. Green would have re-signed that note, and it would have taken care of all of them. So each time that he made a note, he had an opportunity to delete, question, whatever. Now, Mr. Green says that he made all these loans to protect himself from the US&P infringement of copyright. Strange thing is, all these notes were made well in advance, and the money went to him. Does there seem to be something wrong with that? Yeah. Protection of him? He got the money and spent it in advance. In case the note is not enough, here are the checks, and on further back are Mr. Green's endorsements. Now, it does seem, in Mr. Dickey's interest, I will give him this, that it seems Mr. Vargas and Bartlett, who were the first attorneys, had somehow not gotten around to giving him those pieces of information from their file. So what's going on here? And by the way, because I have written about these things this morning, I'm going to ask Patricia if she knows whether or not Mr. Fort has been privy to seeing the checks that were made to his attorney for him and endorsed.
No, he's just been verbally told about them, as far as I know.
I would suggest that maybe you stop by the office and somebody, I don't know if this is playing out of school or not, lawyers, of which we never have one present to help me. Is this applicable in this instance to let Mr. Fort have a copy? He was privy to it. He just has not been privy to getting any money. So we'll talk about that a little later. I'm not in a good mood because what has happened here is unthinkable and, as far as I am concerned, even in the godly realms, unforgivable. The setup and the pressure has come to get Eckers into Nevada. The minute they come across the border, they would be arrested on RICO charges, imprisoned, and that would be the end of that. And I've got to have them next week to clear up some major, major financial transitions from bank to bank. I haven't been, I'm sorry for the term on the tape, bullshitting you. The adversary is working as diligently as possible to put roadblocks every step of the way, from making Ecker unavailable to consummate the transactions and to pull you down before there is an opportunity to get some things done. I think Mr. Dickey isn't thinking clearly, and certainly he does not read Contact, or he would know by now that $2.5 million are set aside for legal fees. Well, I really don't care anymore. If your nation has reached the point where you cannot get an attorney because of justice, then you're in a sad state of affairs anyway. On the other hand, I believe that there will be attorneys who will attempt to at least use up part of that money. And I don't care how you add it up. Mr. Dickey was scared to death you were going to run out of money before he ever would get fully paid. And he knows that Mr. Green, liar that he is, who claims to be a millionaire, can't get his hands on that much money. Ah, but these suckers, my friends, who have suckered you in, have access to CIA money, IRS money, etc., etc. They are paid off to do in their brothers. And if that is unconditional love, I'm sorry, Mr. Fort, you have forsaken God in your love realm. The other half of the coin is that any board of directors member who comes into the state of Nevada will be served papers to put the institute into receivership. More than that, they made arrangements so that the warrant for arrest And the papers, of course, would be filed in Las Vegas, signed by what will come to be some very familiar old, good old boy judges in the federal system, to be served in such a manner that it would be like the municipal court thing. The parties involved would never know it had been issued, and you would not be able to find out because it would not go on the records until served. Good old judicial system, isn't it? So ones have been trying to work out what in the world they should do about this hearing. Well, the books are no good. By the time you have those unbound and the proper paperwork done to them and rebound, you've got more money in them. They are nothing but obsolete magazines. And I would remind you, they come under the classification of magazines, dated material. Ah, but you might say, oh, you just did that to get around the law. No, that was only one reason. So there would be no misunderstanding here about what we're doing. And it's funny that the reading audience out there doesn't seem to misunderstand. There was even one letter that came this very week referring to them as magazines and didn't really understand why they should be referred to in such an insignificant manner. There was another one that said, I don't understand what Mr. Green means. And, oh, by the way, this one is in Utah, in Vernal, and had gotten a whole package from Bozeman, Montana with all this stuff in it. Anonymously. I mean, there's so many people in Bozeman, Montana, you know, to mail out Mr. Green's packets. How subtle can you get? And how sneaky. Oh, indeed, we get every word that I utter back in our face, and my people take the battering. I'm sorry if I put you in an awkward position from time to time, but there is nothing that we're ever going to say that we will hide beneath the bushel. And even taken out of context, as Mr. Green does, is fine with me. He only points up his own idiocy. He has even told precious Sherry Yaunt, now in her 80s, that he will get her money out of the Institute and use it against her. Now, how does that make you feel? Secure in your early relationship with this man who is going to get out the word at all costs. Well, I'm irritated today. I'm irritated that there is so much going on in your world. I'm irritated that you ones are not more alert to some of the dangers involved, because they've drawn pits with spikes in them all along the way. And in the beginning, you cannot know your enemy. And do you run the risk of it being shut down now and go anyway? Or can that trip possibly be important enough to do anything? Especially when negotiations are going on that will shore up the problem. Can any expense of those confounded books be worth it? There's no way. The truth may be worth it. But you're going to have to discern whether or not that is, in fact, worth it to put somebody out of commission and pick up endless more lawsuits and that expense. You're going to have to confront whether or not the gold is even worth it, or has it served its purpose? of corruption to the point of destruction of George and Desiree. Maybe you should settle and let him have the gold and pay off all of you S&P as a bargain. Maybe you should make him eat it and then take him swimming. I think I'd better back off. No one heard that. But we're going to have to. I want some things read onto the record of this tape. And then I've got to have them in hard copy at some point to be dispersed. I believe that most certainly, and I don't need the responsibility of telling you what to do. These came into the contact. One came in directly to Rick Martin, who you will notice is missing. He is attending one of our brothers. Things are going to heat up around here, people. You will notice that instead of more assaults on your physical beings, they're less. Now, we have ones lined up who know how it is. You might think of them as very unsavory characters. I suggest you not judge. If you think what we're writing now is interesting, hold your breath. We ain't seen nothing yet. I'm going to repeat something that I said the other night to the small group, because you're all going to be filled with curiosity now that I understand there was a program on dealing with some of these ancient mysteries, not the prophecies, the mysteries. Although I'm also told there is quite a bit of Nostradamus in those mysteries as presented. I was queried about blue crystals, and were there any along the East Coast? And my response was yes. There is one that has been chipped off of the one here. And you're going to have to understand that they're all shadings and tones of blue. The one here is cobalt blue, almost midnight blue, black almost. Very, very dark. Except that it's very distinctly blue, especially in sunlight or light. The reason that this one is so incredibly valuable is its interspersion, starburst effect, if you will, of gold. There are other things in it too, but it's a burst, and it's very, very conductive, and it's very, very important. And if you think you can program a little crystal of silicon for your computer, again, I have to say, you ain't seen nothing. Now, the tunnels underneath from all these various levels, and now you're going to get your feedback and your confirmation, not just from one mouth who has been around and seen, but it's going to come in from places where you're not going to recognize all of these capabilities. But I believe our friend Bob, just this last week, said, well, but I wonder if you know about those underground things over by Edwards. I understand there are quite a few levels. Well, yeah, I think about 3 or 4 years ago we named them and counted them. Well, there is an ingress, egress area for space vehicles over between the Arizona-New Mexico border, right into the mountainside. And your government has even helped build the ramps in and out of the mountain. So the one piece that has been taken to the area near, I'm not going to give specifics, near Langley, Virginia, is contained in the area where in 1987 a craft was put down on August 17th. They didn't really know what to do with it, but it hit the paper. The crew were, quote, dead. At the same time, one was put down in Texas. It made the Dallas Morning News and the Houston Chronicle. And that one had a crew that was dead. That craft was taken and hidden away at an old obsolete base called McFarland Field. There was a third one set down very hard over at Yucca Flats. This one was more interesting. Three of the crew members were dead. Two were, it was hard, they've never figured it out, what they are. But they are at Nellis. They were carted around. First of all, they couldn't get in the damn thing. Couldn't get close enough to get in. Then when the energy shield was released and they were able to get to the bodies, they weren't able to determine anything with them. And they're still over there, and their own owners of the bodies watch them, and every now and then when it looks fun, they tweak it. It's little enough for my play brothers to have. And we talk about hangars and areas and places and Groom Lake and Bill Cooper, Majestic 12. Oh, my goodness. Well, the other two natural crystals that are of any importance at all, and when I'm talking about natural crystals, I'm talking at this time about blue. That was a specific question. There is one that's extremely important off of Montauk, Long Island, New York, where all of the Rainbow, Phoenix, Phoenix 2, etc. experiments with the Eldridge, USS Eldridge, the Philadelphia experiment, I believe you call it, took place. They learned to enclose these things like ship in the green fog, or the fog, if you will, and make them stealth, and then with the proper transmitting inducers, you had a situation where you could make them move into a time warp, a space warp, actually disappear into another time. There was a problem with that because the idiots didn't know what they were doing, and when it reemerged, part of men's bodies were embedded as part of the superstructure of the damn ship. Now that's really clever. You guys really got it down good. Well, why didn't you do something about it, sir? I cannot even, I'm appalled just to watch it. And if you want to embed your military men in superstructures, I guess that's your business. It does prove something. You can integrate DNA structure into anything from anything. I mean, I have a cannon over here that is my left arm. There's something very important at that place as it came to be recognized as Montauk. That was a general just name given it by the area. And when one's questioned me about it, I hesitate to go into very many details other than as confirmation to their inquiries, because some have very, very serious reasons for asking. They had transmitters Anytime you can set up a transmitter that will put out a frequency of anywhere from 410 to 420 megahertz, you can control anything, anyone, by those pulses. And they did massive studies with that, both on the base and then into the communities, from right there. So to think that in half a century since they did that, that you don't have the capability of dissolving this planet plus pulverizing the minds of all of you. Go look at those towers that make up a grid around your planet. The third important crystalline structure is located off Florida in the Devil's Triangle. But that's not so important, because all of you have heard about the Devil's Triangle. Oh my goodness, they just sent ships out there, and on certain occasions they'd get enveloped in this green fog and this green iridescence, and they were gone. Whole squadrons gone. Flights lost, never to be seen again, or completely losing a whole structure of time. These are windows, my friends, between the other dimensions and you. But there's something extremely important about the Devil's Triangle and its twin, the Equa Triangle in the Sea of Japan. And please remember something. When we took into custody the craft in New Mexico, and we bargained, and we negotiated, and we'll do such and such, if you'll do such and such, we let two of them go. And the requirement of us was that we let them go in the Sea of Japan, so that your lovely, wonderful, caring government could pronounce that they crashed, and they wouldn't even have to later produce the wreckage. It just disappeared into the Devil's Triangle over there. Well, if those are your games, I leave them to you. But what you better look at is the fact that when we talk about a shift of your poles, there is your evidence. If you took your little crank drill and you went straight through from the triangle off Florida to the triangle in the Sea of Japan, it is a straight line midline through your globe. Those were your poles. And so guess what? They're like this now, aren't they? If it could happen once, it not only could, it will happen again. I don't know about you, but I am so sick and tired of lawyers and crooked courts that I cannot stand it for the need to get on with these things. And yet you can't get on with anything until you get this under control. There's no point. It's like those poor, pathetic South Africans who think they have done something. Over 50% of the black people in South Africa are infected with AIDS and are dying. Active AIDS. They are dead people. Africa is set up to be a recreation resort for the elite. Whatever blacks left alive will be utilized as labor servants. That was planned as far back as Cecil Rhodes. So they smile and they teach these primitive savages is the way they refer to them. And I have to admit that watching the Zulus, man, I would treat them that way too. They don't, you know, have the capability of having assault weapons, so they're going to kill you with a machete, bit by bit. Except the plan is to make them extinct. So keep that in mind as you watch all of the reveling going on. You've got to know these things. It is not my first priority of pleasure material. But we better get back now to some discussion about the circumstances in which we find ourselves right now. So, EJ, maybe if you would like to... Well, let's see. Probably before we go on, maybe Brent would read what was sent on the fax, and maybe you would play the message from Ron Jackson yesterday. And then we'll get on with the reading and discuss some of these things.
Okay, this was a fax sent from Gary Ween yesterday afternoon, Saturday, April 30th, 1994. This is to the Contact newspaper. Attention, Commander Hatton and Rick Martin. Through my many confidential sources, I have been advised that the Contact newspaper and all persons involved in its publication are to be destroyed. This terrible conspiracy against you involves your financial ruin, terrorizing your attorneys for the purpose of denying you legal representation and due process of law. A campaign of outrageous lies and phony evidence designed to destroy your reputations and credibility, and includes physical harm if necessary to stop you. This frightening situation has been precipitated because of several events that I will enumerate on. First, your decision to serialize in the Contact my book, There's a Fish in the Courthouse, which was first printed in 1987. This book exposed judicial corruption involving murder, treason, theft of billions of dollars of the people's money and property, and most important of all, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Second, just recently the publishing of Michael Piper's book, Final Judgment. Michael Piper, an associate of the Washington, D.C. newspaper, The Spotlight, has dedicated several chapters in his Final Judgment book, taken from my book, which deals with the guilt of the ADL in the assassination of JFK and their ferocious financial looting and destruction of America's financial and industrial backbone. In his acknowledgments of the works of other authors, Michael Piper writes of my book, special thanks to Gary Ween, whose little-noticed but very important self-published work, There's a Fish in the Courthouse, pointed me in several important directions, enriching the pages of my own work considerably. The Contact and the Spotlight both are perused by all the top politicians and bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., and this danger to yourself stems from this source of ADL power. Former Senator John Tower, killed in a mysterious plane crash, exactly the same as was Audie Murphy. Murphy and Tower, Sheriff Bill Decker, my partner, and myself all met in Rio Closo, New Mexico, shortly after JFK was murdered, and Tower not only told us what occurred in Dallas, but gave us documentation. Other strange things occur. I believe that the Spotlight and its people may be targeted the same as the Contact. I have made numerous phone calls to Michael Piper, and I am unable to reach him and never receive a return call. This is totally different than usual. My calls were always answered by Piper or a return call received promptly. I have had recent personal contact with several U.S. senators who also find themselves in personal jeopardy because they are fighting to operate as genuine representatives of the people and in the interest of the United States. I refer to the last paragraph of my book in 1987, which I hand-delivered to each of the 100 U.S. senators. Quote, only the U.S. Senate, led by the Constitution, is powerful enough to save America. Of the 100 senators, the treasonous, corrupt, and cowardly will desert the people. The small group remaining will have to stand fast. End of quote. We do have a small group that is standing fast, but for now, their names cannot be revealed because they will suffer untold pressure and sabotage at the hands of the powerful ADL conspirators. Excuse the handwriting, but I felt that you should be made aware of what I have learned immediately, thus the hurried message. Sincerely, Gary Ween. And strangely, I have not received my last two copies of Spotlight, nor my last contact. I feel cut off. That's the end of the facts from Gary. Incidentally, I did speak to him yesterday afternoon, and he's very concerned about what's going on, and he expressed that if we need to get any further information or if he has any further information, we can contact him at any time. And he's very definitely our friend and someone that we can work with.
Yes. And these ones are withholding names to make it less miserable for us at this moment, but they are prepared to. You see, this particular network of, quote, insiders get it right from the horse's mouth of people who literally attend or have privy to the soundtracks of these meetings. And that means that they have the names of the ones involved. And they are speaking them, but they're not speaking them in these hurried messages like this. But you'll recognize every one of them, my friends. It's your turn, EJ. Don't let me leave this room without an update on John Sreffer. I'm going to ask for other inquiries, but with so many things going on, it's very hard for me to just keep them all right out there. I would like to mention Gunther, too, before we leave.
We'll rush right along, then. There is a place in this writing for to play the transcription, so I'll do that. writing of Sunday, May the 1st, 1994. The following is a transcription of a taped telephone call received yesterday, April 30th, in the contact office. It was requested by the calling party that the conversation be recorded with witnesses due to the inability to get faxed hard copy sent from his location, which is in prison in Carson City, Nevada.
Right where you can really get the information on a Carson City case, I might add.
The calling party is Ron Jackson, with whom we are now all familiar, and we believe him to have credible information in a direct conduit. Since there are now other warnings of the same information coming all the way from the West Coast, Northwest, I believe this should be the focus of our attention. I had already warned you of this intention contained within 2 days ago, and all but ignored by you in efforting to please your so-called defense attorney. I will tell you further that the enemy camp was already privy to the intention of Mr. Dickey to dump you as clients. By this I mean the ongoing cases regarding the Phoenix Institute. I believe that point can also be verified by witnesses. These acts of unconditional love, as being expressed against the Eckers and the Institute, are a bit overwhelming, especially since it seems the unconditional love part of this BS is given to the adversary and to the very one who has received funds for Leon Fort and now claims he did not. The endorsed and deposited checks seem to make no impact on our unconditional love status. Does this all mean that our attorney, Mr. Dickey, is playing with the very enemy he claims to be serving you against? I won't answer that one for you. But the results are the same under any circumstances. I find that what is actually happening is that Mr. Dickey is terrified on two counts. One, because the cards are stacked against you by the thugs, court, and opposing federal criminals. The other facts are that he has been convinced you will not have funds to pay him adequately. For what? So far, there has not been even one evidence of anything positive from him. Now, with all the time and money expended, he says he wants out prior to the next hearing scheduled for next Thursday because Eckers prefer not to go to Carson City. And that somehow communications have broken down and you don't fully trust him. It becomes evident that Mr. Dickey was not a good reader of contact, or he would have noted that there will be available several $1 million just for these suits. Why all the focus on the destruction of the Eckers? Because the assumption is that it is through their being taken out that the contact can be silenced. It is assumed that no further information will be coming forth about the turncoat, Judas coat, Mr. Greitz's favorite term for me, activities of Sir Greitz and his legions of immediate cohorts, Gary Anderson et al. As the revelations pour in from our writers who know the who's who and the what's what, the stuff is in the fan, and it and is getting in the fan through the now world-renowned contact. Calls from very high-level subjects have been made to threaten, deal, bribe, etc., the parties involved in these revelations. At any rate, the following is a transcription from the tape as received by Mr. Rick Martin at contact yesterday from Mr. Ron Jackson. This is being transcribed to facilitate having hard copy. Mr. Jackson will put the information to signed documentation as well, but time being of the utmost importance, he handled the warning in this manner. Now I'll play the tape instead of doing the transcript.
Today is April 30th, 1993. Okay, Ron, go ahead.
Hey, you better record this, Rick, if you would.
Okay, hang on 1 second.
All right.
Okay, we're ready.
Okay, I understand you, with some of your legal problems, you have E.J. is having a court appearance here in the state next week, and the word is that they're going to arrest him when he comes into the state.
Oh, is that right?
Now, so, I don't know how accurate it is, but usually my source is pretty good, so I would certainly look at it, and there might be a little conspiracy going on. Some people might be wanting to, you know, get a little heat off of themselves, and they might roll over on you if you're not careful.
Okay, well, I appreciate the warning.
Okay, I thought you should know that.
Well, thank you.
What's going on over there? Anything?
Well, let me turn the recorder off then. Hang on 1 second.
Discretion being the better part of valor. We're back to Hatton's comments. All right now, nice people, in view of the above information from someone who is about as high in the know as anyone, coupled with at least two other warnings from entirely different locations, what would you do if you were Eckers and or the board of directors of the Phoenix Institute? How would you feel if your attorney was resigning if you didn't show up in Nevada? What would you do if he did, in fact, already have his withdrawal papers ready to file on Monday? What would you do under these circumstances when the opposition is indicating that Dickey, Dixon, and Tips were working with your enemy? Well, if, quote, God be with you, who can stand against you? That is a nice saying, but it is valid only if you act appropriately. The case in point was an order to show cause as to why these notes of Green should not be enforced and the books returned, which he holds as hostage. The trial itself is not set until January 1995. The books as such, because of the now outdated material, magazine type of dating, and all of the books would have to be rebound to remove America West's authority and property rights statements, could these certain risks be taken? There is so much valid and solid evidence available that the entire confrontation is totally absurd. The intent would be, you see, to arrest Eckers before ability to testify. Also, to serve papers which represent federal RICO and mandatory receivership on any and